Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary. With Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious. That ball was on the line.
And it's the time of the show, the time of the week indeed. Well, I love that little ident. Well, we go live to our intrepid sports reporter, Mark. Are you receiving me from the baseline?
I am, loud and clear.
Did you hear that indent? Did you recognise who that rather vociferous American was in the second half?
I don't know the name, but I definitely know the soundbite, as it's played a lot on YouTube, so I know it.
It's the great John McEnroe, and I think it's Wimbledon about 1979 or 1980, where he finally lost his proverbial, because he was the bad boy of tennis. So there you go. Now, there's been a bit of tennis, obviously, but tell me what's been crossing your sports radar, my friend.
Well, we've been lucky this week. There's been a lot of international games as well in football, which is probably something we have to cover because England is hoping to qualify for the World Cup. There's no reason that they shouldn't, but we still get to analyse their game against Andorra.
Right, okay, that's a word for it. Come on then, the mighty Andorra. I think they're ranked between, what is it, St. Kitts and Chad Andorra on the FIFA World Rankings, 147, 148 or something like that. So, what was it, a 10-goal thriller? What happened?
Yeah, something like that. If the 10-goal thriller is actually a 2-0 win, then yes. But I suppose I've been comparing this a lot to Portugal's match, because Portugal are in Ireland's group, so I'm keeping an eye on them too, and they were against Armenia, and they came up with a 5-0 win, and that's the sort of result you expect out of a match like this. No disrespect to Andorra, but, you know, the players playing for England are all on 200,000 per week. You expect them to be the best of the best, but it was a 2-0 win, and England sort of lacked, I guess, creativity in my mind. Even Tuchel admitted that England lacked a bit of a spark and creativity, and were sort of dependent on almost set pieces to really challenge Andorra. At the end of the day, sometimes winning isn't the most exciting thing you can do in the world, so you need to win those matches where you're perhaps not at your best, which England have done so far. They're top of their group with 4 wins from 4, so that's the headline that you have to focus on. But I think the match in general was a lot of sideways passes. It was sort of a lot of backward passes. It looked a lot like, you know, the same kind of game that people were blaming Southgate for, you know, that they're saying, oh, this is an uninspired England and that the players should be doing better. So there are still questions.
An awful lot of the England support, because it was played at Villa Park, wasn't it? So the first time it'd been played, in somewhere like that, for a long time. And a lot of the England fans just got up and left, you know, before the end. And that's hardly, they all say, well, a win is a win. And this, but if you're only doing I think it was what, 11 shots on target, it's hardly going to keep, you know. And I know it's only Andorra and they've got to get there. But if you are an England fan, and you have my sincere condolences if you are, but with the England team has been here before, where they always get a decent, i.e. easy to qualify group. But what that kind of means is that when they get to, you know, the final of, be it the Euros or the World Cup, they just seriously underperform. They don't get into gear until the, you know, until the second match.
Yeah, and listen, at the end of the day, let's not forget that Andor did put in a good performance. Like it was also England not showing up, but it was also them performing well. And even Tuchel said the same thing as you did. He was like, the stadium atmosphere didn't help the players. You'd hope that if the players being paid 250 yes. grand a week, they wouldn't need the correct atmosphere. They'd be able to show up. But I do put this down as one simple thing. Like England needed a win. They got a win. That's the headline, but I'm definitely looking at other people in the qualifiers, you know, i.e. Portugal, Spain, yeah. You know, those teams are winning 5-6-0 against these teams of the same quality as Andorra. So if that's anything to go by, it gives us a slight idea of what the World Cup should be like. Mm-hmm. But I think most pundits and experts always put England in the same bracket. It does tend to be the English pundits who expect England to go on and win these World Cups and European trophies. But I think most experts in the world are fairly fairly realistic about
what's happening with the Republic. Then give me a quick 101 on what's happening with the Republic and how they're doing. If they got Portugal in their groups with the evergreen Cristiano Ronaldo, I mean, how are things going for the Republic at the moment?
Ireland, the manager is much more optimistic than I am. I think it's, you know, realistically a group we can qualify out of, but that can sort of lean more to the will not. In last night's game, or the night before against Hungary, when we're losing 2-1 nearly, I think it was the 91st minute, and Adam Ida drawed it up, but there was potential for a win there. And when you're not winning those matches, because realistically going to Hungary and getting a win, that's going to be very hard. You know, Portugal coming to Ireland then going to them, that's going to be extra hard. So for Ireland to qualify, it's going to be a fairly big ask. But I guess if you go back to maybe 2 years ago, the whole nation, the sport, and even the FAI, you know, there's much more of a positive atmosphere around it. There is like a maybe instead of this team really can't play. And even internationally, Ireland has seen a lot of positive strides in the last 2 years in football, into having those players in the right place, you know. And I think maybe not this World Cup, but maybe, you know, the next Euros, there is a high chance that Ireland can qualify and do well in the group stage.
Excellent.
But being realistic, I think this World Cup might be a bit too soon.
Hey, well, we always like it when Ireland qualify. Now, just quickly, because Scotland had a good performance, they needed to get a result against Denmark in their group, and they played at a nil draw. They've got a huge match tonight against Belarus, who look like they're going to be the whipping boys. So they've got to put on a... I mean, I would take a 2-0 Scotland win, an Andorra-like performance against Belarus, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and Scotland are one of those teams that we come expected to do well, because they have, you know, quietly sort of built up a reputation of a solid group of players, especially that midfield. I love that midfield of Gilmore and McTominay. I'm a huge fan of McTominay. I was heartbroken when Man United sold him, but they did, and now he's doing really well. A Ballon d'Or listed player. So Scotland have quietly built up, I think, a good few players, especially internationally. I think that's something that might go, I guess, under the radar, is that when you do have players playing internationally, it makes those camps a little bit easier to stomach. You don't want all your players playing everywhere. It helps for, you know, unison and chemistry if some of your players are playing in the same league at the very least. But I think when you have players who are playing internationally, I know what it means to be away from home, to grab a result in a different country, in a different league, against different opposition. It's especially beneficial to you, and I don't see them really coming across many problems against Belarus.
And also, Wales got a good result away to Kazakhstan, and of course they're managed by Shire retiring Craig Bellamy. So that's looking quite, you know, decent for them.
Yeah, I don't think many people had a lot of massive expectations of Wales, although, you know, in all regards to the team, it's not a terrible team at all. So I think people are just generally happy. There's probably a little bit of still a hangover from the Euros 2016. That thrill has never really left the Wales team, and they've always been sort of a team to watch out. Very exciting, so I'm looking forward to seeing they qualify as well.
Right, Wales is crossing, and of course, Northern Ireland, unfortunately, they came up against Germany, was it last night? I think it was, and that was a 3-0. I mean, they got the 3-1. They got a goal, but it's going to be a big ask, isn't it, for Northern Ireland to make it to the World Cup. They haven't been there for a very long time.
No, it's been a long time, but here's hoping, because the more teams we have, because it's an exciting World Cup in the format that it is, that it is across such a large area. I can't remember, maybe Brazil was something similar, but this is going to be in Canada, America, and Mexico, so it's going to be an exciting team for, it reminds me of almost, you know, the excitement around the 90s.
Yes, oh yes, indeed. Now, Premier League's going to be back. New players to the transfer window shut. Isak is going to finally, hopefully, play. It's going to be an interesting season. It's panning out to be. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly look at the Manchester Derby. That's coming up. You know, we've got United and City, and then of course looking at Liverpool, seeing if they can carry that momentum post international break. And you know, they're going against Burnley, so I don't see a reason why they shouldn't. That should be not an easy match for them, but compared to their last two, should be, you know, more welcome. And then the Manchester City versus Manchester United is something I think we all have our eyes on, because both teams are, you know, struggling right now. Both sort of sitting at, I think Manchester City have one win from three games, and then Manchester United's struggles have been fairly well documented across the board. So it's a time for, I guess, both teams to come back from the international break, solve their problems, and say, well, listen, we're back. These worries are now gone. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to be a tight game, probably 2-1 to City, and then United are sort of in a bit of a defensive dilemma, because Dalot is questionable after a muscle issue, so it could possibly, we could be seeing Diallo in the back position, or maybe one of the younger players, so there's still questions there.
Fair enough. Now, should we move to the golf, because McIlroy seems to have hit top form.
Yeah, just the right point. I was actually driving by, was it Saturday, I think, I was driving by the K Club, and the traffic was just crazy. I mean, there's no one like the Irish to come out and support one of their own. We were driving for about 5 minutes, and we still didn't see the end of the traffic that was being directed in by the guards over here. But on the final day, I wouldn't have exactly bet on him to be coming out the winner. He was trailing 4 shots, I believe, at the start of the day, but he just did what McIlroy does and found that magic at the right time. And I was something like an incredible, like 30-foot putt to get an eagle on the 18th. That I just don't really remember anything like that in the Irish Open's history. But besides that, he did collect I think it was a million, and so it was a nice payday for that putt. He wasn't stranded on that, but I think it also gave him a lot of momentum at the right time for the Ryder Cup and BMW PGA Championship. I think it's fair to say that after the Masters, McIlroy has been in this massive hangover that he hasn't been able to get out of. And it's understandable, because once you've won it all, what is there to really, you know, why are you getting up at 6 a.m. and practicing? Why are you working this hard? You have already won it all. So there's questions on whether McIlroy would ever sort of be as hungry as he was before to win. And I guess this is just momentum coming at the right time for him. He's collected up a good few points and sort of give him that hunger. It's always good to win in front of your national fans.
Yeah.
He hasn't won since 2016 at the K Club. So, it was a good win, and I don't think many people would have called it, but that's the magic of golf.
Now, On the 13th and 14th of September, the Davis Cup is being played at the Puente Romano, which is just down the road from us here in Marbella, and Spain will take on Denmark. And something tells me that it's going to be rather busy down there and fever pitch, because Carlos Alcaraz is in the Spanish team. And if you look at your Spanish sports papers this morning, my friend, guess what's on all the front pages?
It's a good day in Spain.
I mean, he's even on the front. He's on the front pages and on the back pages. The Mundo Deportivo says colossal. Sport says imparable. I love Alcaraz. I say, and Marca, eres el número uno. So I think we know where we're going with this one.
He was electric. He was. And what is this? His sixth Grand Slam overall, all before the age of 22. I mean, talking about prodigies, he's setting the precedent for them. And this is his second U.S. Open title. And wow, what a match. Like, yeah. I think, what a match. 6-2, then it was 3-6 to Sinner, 6-1 and 6-4 again. These two were really lighting it up. And, you know, although it was sort of close, we talk about the 3-6 and the 6-4. I still think it was you know, Alcaraz looked really comfortable during that final, even though it was tense and dramatic. I thought, you know, he had about 10 aces, only 3 serve breaks. He was really impressive. He just showed up at the right time, and there's a lot of questions because we didn't get to see them at the Cincinnati final, and we got to see a few sets before Sinner had to pull out for injury to focus on this, which was the bigger title. But Alcaraz is definitely setting new records in the world of tennis, and he's going to be a threat for many years to come. And I suppose the exciting thing is that these two are going to be a threat for you know, the next 10 years in the world of tennis. It's not like we're coming in at the end where, you know, it's Ronaldo versus Messi and this is really their last dance. These guys are 22, 21. You know, they're just getting started, and that is the most exciting thing.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was wondering who was going to replace, you know, would there be a Spanish player after Nadal, you know, and that mm-hmm. but blimey, O'Reilly, we have that in spades. By the way, if you're thinking of going to watch the Davis Cup in Marbella, it is already sold out. So you might as well, but you could probably stand outside and get the atmosphere anyway. And as you may or may not be aware, I'm something of a petrol head, and so. I may not go to church regularly on a Sunday, but I will certainly make my pilgrimage to the Cathedral of Speed, Monza.
Yes, yeah, we were spoiled actually for a race. It was the fastest race in Grand Prix history.
Yeah.
It was 1 hour and 13 minutes and 24.3 seconds with an average speed of 250 kilometers per hour. So it was literally the fastest race in the history of F1, and it was seen by the fastest man in F1 history, Max Verstappen, who led, I think, by over 19 seconds by the end, claiming only his third victory of the season. But I still think it was a great showing from Red Bull, and I wanted to talk about them because obviously now the only talking point really post race is the McLaren mix up. With Lando Norris, I think Piastri came into the pit at a 1.9 second pit stop, which is extremely fast. Not the fastest, but, you know, extremely fast. Lando Norris came in and I think had a 5.9 second pit stop. One of the gunners didn't attach the front left wheel right. And it was a slow pit stop, but the confusion came when they came out. So they're both chasing for the win at this point. There's not much of a chance to catch Verstappen. But there is a little one, so you have to sort of go all in. But the McLarens ordered the two drivers to swap around because of the slow pit stop.
Yeah, it was. It raised eyebrows amongst racing fans because this wasn't a, you know, a technical. This was because we, you know, Lando had a slow pit stop, and you can sort of raise your eyebrows a bit at that one because it wasn't exactly, you know. I mean, it's the championship is between these two McLaren drivers. But I thought Piastri took it rather well than just going, you know, well, you can take that one, and you know, I wouldn't give a 4x for your pit orders, for your team orders. But there you go.
Yeah, well, the way I look at it is Oscar has shown us throughout the season and even the seasons before, he's a very pragmatic individual. At the end of the day, what was at stake here was 3 points. You know, it was between second and third. I think in his mind, there probably was a point where he said, well, why should I? You know, maybe I'll just hold on to this position. But you're halfway through the season, you've still got a good few races to go, and it's 3 points. So I think in his mind, he probably just decided that it probably wasn't worth, the squeeze wasn't worth the juice, as they say. But still, it does raise a lot of eyebrows, because McLaren said this wasn't a matter of, you know, fixing a mistake or anything like that. It was a matter of principle that they did this because this was the agreement within the team that this is what happens, that if a driver does have a slow pit stop or something like that, that they are then prioritized. And in their mind, it wasn't a big deal because it was just putting something back the way it was meant to be. But I think it does set a fairly difficult precedent, because what if you do get into, it will become a situation that a swap like this might actually define the championship, that you might be fighting for a win and this might happen, and it's a matter of seconds. And what's the precedent then that, it's the final race in Abu Dhabi and you have to swap because one of them had a slow pit stop? It's of course hypothetical, but it's a very dangerous precedent to set. And I think it probably would have been better for McLaren and even Toto Wolff, who has experience with Hamilton and Rosberg in this very situation, and said that it's setting a very difficult precedent for them to manage, because at the end of the day, what happens is you do have to make a difficult decision in 10, 15 seconds if this happens again in the heat of a race.
Indeedy. But what was good was this, because, you know, a couple of races ago, we had Lewis Hamilton saying he wasn't sure whether he could keep the enthusiasm for F1 going. He wasn't sure it was the right place. And then, as a Scuderia driver, he goes to Monza for the first time. And if you wanted anything to give you your mojo back, ye gods, the Tifosi can bring it back. And Ferrari had a good showing.
Yeah, I mean, what we've been looking for Ferrari for the last few weekends is stability. It's something that they haven't been able to quite figure out, but they did. You know, Charles was fighting with Piastri for third place at some points, and that was really solid for him to deliver a top four. And then Hamilton was almost like a hot knife through butter at some points. He climbed from 10th to then 6th and could have went further possibly. But no, it was a very impressive showing from Hamilton, who it hasn't been nice, because he's won at Monza, I think, 5 times. It hasn't been nice sort of seeing him down himself and not be the Hamilton that we're all familiar with. But that is sometimes the world of high performance sports, is that sometimes you can lose confidence, and hopefully this gives it a little bit back to him. And Ferrari found stability on home ground, so hopefully they can carry that into the next race. And there's a good performance as well from Isaac Hadjar, who started from the pit lane and managed to secure 10th place. And, you know, 1 point for Racing Bulls could make the difference. So overall, I was fairly impressed with the weekend. There was obviously a few moments that I was baffled by. Behrman's penalty with Sainz,
yep,
was one that I wasn't sure on. But if we're looking at sort of regulation standards and refereeing across all sports, they're all a bit wonky right now. So there's nothing unfamiliar there.
That should be a t-shirt. They're all a bit wonky right now, is, I think, a t-shirt we should be making. And talking about wonky, I think the next stop is Baku in Azerbaijan, which is always a bonkers race. So we're looking forward to that one immensely.
Oh yeah, oh no, definitely. And I don't think Verstappen is, but we definitely are.
Thanks for that. Thanks for the update. If people want to follow you online, say hello, where's the best place to find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Mark on the Radio, and of course listen to the Daybreak Sports podcast, where you find your TRE podcast.
Mark, as always, thanks for joining us this morning. Fascinating sports updates.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide children's marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide children's marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.